This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. Man, this week I'm joined by Angelo Valenti. And Angelo is an author, a coach. He is just talking about the stuff that, man, I wish I had somebody imparting wisdom to me when, you know, I was bringing up my kids, not understanding the fact of balance between who I was, what I was doing, and how I was parenting my children. Angelo has a great depth of knowledge on this, and I've had the joy of listening to him on other podcasts. So I'm excited to have him here today. Angelo, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing terrific. How are you doing today, Mike?
Totally stoked and excited. And we had a little bit of a conversation before, and man, you're just pouring out wisdom that I so wish I had before, because the way I expected things to go, Angelo, here's a clue. They didn't.
Do they ever?
I think from time to time they do, but a lot of the time, like at this point in my life, Angelo, man, I'm 53. I thought it was going to be empty nest, you know, just songbirds and everything, smooth sailing. I didn't expect for, you know, parents and in-laws who have health problems pass away, kind of be in that situation. And, dude, things happen, but it's being able to roll with it and learn from it. And I love that that's, you know, what you've done and what you're providing information about, man. It's so crucial.
Well, thank you.
God, appreciate it. Let's jump in here, man. What does it look like for you today on the professional side of life?
Okay. On the professional side, what I spend most of my time doing is helping businesses hire the right people, develop the right people for their organization. Every company has its own culture, has its own personality, just like an individual has a personality. So I try to help companies match the individual with the culture of the company. And I've been doing that for 42 years. That's my company psychologist business. I've also been coaching leaders and those people who want to be leaders for those 42 years. I was coaching when coaching wasn't even a recognized profession. Yeah. They just called it acting as a sounding board. I mean, and this is like going back to 1980. And lately, last year I published a book. The name of the book is You're Making This Way Too Hard, Find Your Easy Way to Enjoy Life. And the reason I wrote that book is in my coaching of leaders. These are people who to the outside world are hugely successful. But inside, they're not enjoying the fruits of their labor. They're not enjoying the success that other people seem to think that they have in a way that they should. And I think if you're not enjoying life, you're missing the whole purpose of being on this earth, because I don't think we were put on this earth to be miserable. I think we have to be taught to be miserable. So if you, so my mission now, I kind of up my mission to not just work on leaders from a business standpoint, but to help people find the inner joy, the peace, the contentment. I use the word happiness, but happiness isn't really the word. Joy is really the word, in their personal and their professional life. So that's what things look like from a business standpoint.
Well, and the thing with your book, man, I told you this, the warning that you have on your book, if you're happy being unhappy, don't read this book. To me, that just brought home the fact, if I'm happy or if I'm content with being where I'm at, dissatisfied as I may be, I have that choice. I can pick up the book. I can take action. There's a slew of things that I can do to bring about change in my life. But I think one of the titles was like, something about like you're in charge.
Take the controls. And you're in control.
There was another one. Oh, you're the controller.
Dealer's choice. Dealer's choice. And you're the dealer.
And you're the dealer. Yes, that was what it was. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, Angelo, that is so spot on, because like I felt like I was Eeyore for so long, where I was a victim. I wasn't in control. I was the Pinocchio with the strings, right? I'm the marionette, and somebody else has got the strings controlling it. And for that warning and those titles there, I was like, this is the truth. Despite how I feel, the truth is, yes, I can control things and I am the dealer, but the power comes in when we recognize it and start acting. And that's why I just loved that part of your book, man. So,
well, thank you. And that's the hardest thing for people to do, is put into practice what they know. I mean, you have more control over your life than you think you do. And you always have more choices than you think you have. You'll hear people say, well, I didn't have any choice. That's wrong. You did have other choices. You chose not to exercise those choices. So nobody's backed, rarely, unless it's a matter of life and death with somebody holding a gun to your head, that you're backed so far into a corner that you don't have any other choice. In most situations, you do have many more options than you realize, but it takes courage and it takes consistency and dedication and persistence and self-awareness to make those choices.
Mm-hmm. So when I'm in a situation, Angelo, and I'm thinking, you know, genuinely thinking, I don't have a choice in the situation. How is it that you're coaching guys to like see the options outside of what they see is the one route that they're stuck on? Like, how do I see what's available and kind of open my eyes to those opportunities?
Well, one of the first things that a person can do in that situation is I will ask them, if your friend were in a situation that you're in now, what advice would you give that friend? What would you tell them to do? And everybody's got great advice for what other people should do. But they don't always have great advice for what they should do. So I try to flip it on them and say, what would your friends tell you to do? What would your family tell you to do? What would you tell somebody to do? Because you want the best for that other person, somebody that you care deeply about. What would you tell them? And then think hard about following that advice.
Yeah. And that's funny, Angelo, because that's in coaching the guys. That's what I do as well. And I do that with myself, you know, because it's like, for whatever reason, when I'm looking at things, or, you know, you've got clients that are doing it, you will almost get like this tunnel vision. But once you remove yourself from the equation, it's like everything spreads out and you're like, oh, hey, there are other choices. I just wasn't able to see it. So that's amazing advice. I appreciate that, man. Thank you for the insight there.
Well, I really try to get my coaching clients to, I don't try to instill my own set of values or my own expectations on that. I want them to come to that on their own, and whatever tricks I can use or whatever questions I can use or whatever, help them steer their, trim the sail. That's what I try to do. Get them to come to that insight themselves, because it lasts longer, means more to them.
Yeah. Giving them tools and equipping them to be able to have their own visibility, right? When they're in that situation and you're not there, that's the real gift, is that, you know, they can work for themselves in that situation.
Right.
On the personal side of life, what does it look like for you today?
I can't remember a time when I've actually been happier in my life than I am today. I'll be 75 years old at the end of April. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. I'm a husband. My three sons, my two biological sons and my stepson from my second wife are all married. They have children. They're successful in their careers. And when I look in the mirror, I say to myself, no matter how screwed up I might be, I did a fairly decent job of raising three sons because they turned out okay. And they're solid citizens, no big issues. I'm still friends with all of them. See them all the time. I don't see my son in Knoxville as much as I see my other two, but, you know, it's just that's geography. So I'm very, I'm proud of that, that they were able to, withstand my lousy parenting and turn out okay. My wife is a blessing. We've been married 8 years now. We've been together over 10 years. And I met her after my second wife passed away. I won't say unexpectedly because it took 3 years. She was sick for 3 years before she passed away. But, you know, I happened to meet a great woman who shares a lot of my values, and we're both introverts, so we're real happy sitting in the same room, not talking to each other for 4 or 5 hours, and think we had a great time together. And it's hard to find somebody who you're that comfortable with that you can sit for long periods of time and just be happy that you're in the same room with that person. Yeah. So I'm very blessed. Rachel's a remarkable woman.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome. You had talked about happiness and joy, but them being different. What's right. the difference between happiness and joy, and which should we focus on?
If you don't mind, I'll use an illustration in my book.
Please.
Okay. Let's say I grew up in Cleveland. Okay. So I'm a big Cleveland Browns fan, always have been. And that's my cross to carry, being even a Cleveland Browns fan. So let's say they're playing the Steelers, big rivals. All right. Browns get the kickoff. They drive down, score a touchdown. I'm happy. Right? Pittsburgh storms back, scores 10 points. They're taking the lead 10-7 in the middle of the second quarter. Well, I'm unhappy. The Browns score a touchdown at the end of the second quarter. They go up. So I'm happy. Pittsburgh storms out of the locker room, second half, score 10 points. Browns are down. I'm unhappy. Cleveland comes back, ties the game with 2 minutes left. I'm happy. Pittsburgh kicks a field goal with 2 seconds left. We lose the game. I'm unhappy. So happiness is transitory. It comes and goes. And joy is permanent. You can feel joy all day, every day. And I think it's important for people to realize they should be shooting for joy and not shooting for happiness. Happiness comes and goes 10, 20, 30 times a day. March Madness is going on right now. You're going to see lots of people fluctuating between happiness and misery based on point spreads over this weekend, right?
Yeah.
So joy is something that's from within. External factors don't create joy. Joy comes from within. Happiness is more created by external factors.
So joy would be more of a decision, whereas like events are driving the happiness.
Happiness is more of a fleeting emotion. It's like the excitement of, you know, jumping out of a airplane, hopefully with a parachute. And joy is more, it's a longer term feeling. It's being able to appreciate simple things, you know, a sunrise, your dog licking your face when you wake up in the morning, having that really good cup of coffee, doing something fun at work that really gives you satisfaction, even if nobody else knows about it. Those are the kinds of things that can give you joy.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So when you were going through one transition in your life, I think it was Oklahoma City College.
Yes.
Right? They had laid you off, and you were able to you know, then transition, go ahead and make the career change. There's a lot of guys that are experiencing that kind of being laid off, you know, downsized with different employers. How, like, what were some of the struggles that you faced in that time? And how can guys now, because you're, you know, you're working with men in the corporations, how can they retain their identity despite that environment that gives us almost like our identity? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I
how do we retain us?
And I think that's something that people should be working away from, is to treat what you do as what you are or who you are. And those two things are totally different. What you are is much deeper than what you do. What you do is a set of skills that you have. And if you're in a leadership role, you have the opportunity to influence other people to achieve their best. But what you are is, how do your friends see you? How do your business associates see you? How does your family see you? How does your community see you? That's who you are. You're much more than what you do. And if you don't believe that, if you died tomorrow, there would be a job posting for your job up the next day. But your family's going to miss you forever. There are more opportunities today for people to start their own business. You can start it with a side hustle and turn it into a business. Technology's made it really easy to do things that were very difficult before. And what people need to realize is, all they have to do is take that first step in moving in a different direction. If there's something that they've always wanted to do professionally, but they were locked into their job and they didn't feel like they could make a change because they had good benefits or they had responsibilities and all, if those things are taken away from them, it's possible to look at that as freedom and not losing something, but gaining something. You're gaining an opportunity to work towards something that you're passionate about. And I think the most professionally joyful people are the people who are doing something that they love to do. I feel like I'm blessed because I found this by accident, this profession that I love, and I've been doing for the last 40 something years. And people, I'm at an age now where when I haven't seen somebody for a while, the first question they ask me is, are you still working? And my answer is always, yes, I'm still working. My funeral and my retirement party are going to be on the same day, because I love what I do. So it doesn't feel like work. It's something I get up in the morning and I'm excited to do, because I'm working with people who are trying to be their best selves. And that's motivating to me, to watch them grow, watch them progress, watch them change their mindset a little bit, watch them go from frustrated by what they can't do to being excited by what they can do. And too many people get locked in to what they can't do, what they feel like they can't do, instead of focus on what they can do. Everybody has strengths and weaknesses. And I think if you focus more on your strengths and less on your weaknesses, you got a much better chance of achieving something that you want to achieve, both personally and professionally.
Absolutely. Are you using like gratitude practices or some kind of other method to guide your clients?
Yes, I do.
That kind of exercise.
I do encourage my clients, for example, if gratitude is one of the things they're struggling with, to start a gratitude journal, which is not earth-shakingly new advice. I mean, people have been doing it for a long time, but it lasts as advice because it works. If you focus on, I like to tell people to focus three things every day, write down three things that you're grateful for in the present. And then this is harder for people. Write three things you're grateful for in the past. Because I think too many people look at their past through a filter of what didn't happen that in their life rather than what did happen good in their life. We'll tend, you know, if we didn't have a great relationship with our parents, we'll magnify that way out of proportion. I mean, some parents are genuinely terrible. I recognize that. But most aren't. Most are just trying to do the best job they can. So if you try to look back on some of the things that were good, went well, and it's easier for you to make that transition to what you're grateful for today. And I also like people to practice sometimes gratitude with a twist, which is if something goes wrong in their life, let's say their coffee maker breaks, or let's say their dog pees on the carpet on one of their rugs in their house. And this is what they wake up to that morning. So rather than getting frustrated or angry, if you practice gratitude with a twist, you could say, well, thank you, coffee maker, for giving me a chance to go down to the coffee shop and have a relaxing breakfast. And thank you to the dog for giving us an opportunity to get a new rug. I didn't like that rug much anyway. So if you can put a positive spin or a funny spin on something bad that happens, then you'll find that, you know, the negative effect of that isn't quite as bad and you can start to feel better. You don't want to start your day. You don't want at any point in your day, you don't want the events of the day to drag you down for two. I mean, sometimes they just do because sometimes bad stuff happens, but the extent to which you can put a good spin on it or a positive spin on it can help you. And I try to get people to think of the positive in any situation. And if you look at most situations, if you look at them just right, there's something funny about it. I mean, but sometimes you have to look really hard. But
yes.
But and it depends on if you're looking at it from your perspective or somebody else's perspective. You know, everything's funny if you look at it just right, almost. And the ability to laugh at yourself is something else I work with people on. If you can laugh at yourself, first of all, you'll never run out of material because you're always doing stuff that you can laugh at. And you won't take yourself too seriously. And if you don't take yourself too seriously, you won't take life too seriously. And if you don't take life too seriously, you'll have a much better time. You'll find more joy in life if everything isn't so darn serious.
Yeah. Yeah, there's got to be that humor, that joy, that just lighthearted memories that you're creating along the way. Otherwise, it just seems so burdensome and it becomes almost like not Groundhog Day, but Groundhog Week and then month and Groundhog Year. And you can't separate them. You had talked about your second wife and her being sick for 3 years.
Yes.
And her going through ALS, you know, it's one of those that I think so many of us expect that, Angelo, life is just always going to be like it is right now. And there's nothing further from the truth. Our kids are growing up. We're aging. Our parents are aging. Like, things are always in flux. So how do we take control and be present in the moment and yet realize, hey man, you know, like for me right now, Angelo, both of my parents have passed away. My father-in-law has passed away and my mother-in-law is, you know, struggling with her health. But the big thing that they had looked at and almost, you know, hung their hat on or their coat was, hey, when I retire, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Well, when they got to that point, Angelo, unfortunately, none of the four of them were able to live those dreams, like what they had said they wanted to experience. So how do we still move towards those things, but not forget about creating the memories in the here and now, both, you know, our personal ones and those with our family?
Well, that's a really great question. And it's really hard to do because we're kind of conditioned to think of, well, we're going to work until we're 65 and then we're going to retire and then we'll take, you know, we'll go on cruises or all the other cliches that people, you see retired people doing in TV commercials or on TV shows. But I think it's important to experience life in the moment, right now. I mean, if you've got, maybe you're working for a company and you only get 2 weeks vacation, take a week's vacation, go to Europe. Go to, you know, do something that you'll remember the rest of your life. I mean, too many people are caught up in materialism. They want to buy stuff. And if I ask you, maybe you bought something really cool and expensive 10 years ago and you were really excited about it and you couldn't wait to get it. If I asked you today, what was that thing? What did it bring you joy and pleasure? Does it bring you joy and pleasure today? And you're going to say, no, that was 10 years ago. But if you took a trip somewhere, Hawaii, Alaska, Africa, Australia, wherever, Europe, maybe it's just you always wanted to go to Yosemite National Park. If you went there 10 years ago, I guarantee you, you remember so much of that trip 10 years down the road. Experiences are what we remember. Stuff is not what we remember. And so I really encourage people, the little story I like to tell is, let's say it's 1912 and you're in England. You're getting ready to board this ocean liner to go to New York City. And you're in upper class lodgings. I mean, you got really good tickets, so you get to eat all the fancy food and they're having great dinners. And on the first night, you say, well, I'm kind of watching my weight, so I think I'm going to pass on dessert tonight. Okay. So 2 days later, the Titanic hit an iceberg and you're bobbing in the North Atlantic thinking, my gosh, I should have had the cake. What a waste. So if an opportunity to do something that gives you joy presents itself, don't think about, I'm going to do that someday, because nobody's guaranteed someday. The only thing you're guaranteed is right now. Something can happen. Your life can change in a heartbeat. And when my wife, my late wife got ALS, that happened in a heartbeat. She had a seizure during the night. And, of course we took her to the hospital and she was misdiagnosed for a little while. So we didn't know really what was wrong with her. But when we finally got the diagnosis, I mean, you know, and I know, and everybody out there knows, I mean, that's a death sentence. It's just a matter of when that sentence is going to be carried out. So we didn't know how long she was going to live. And fortunately, she never got to the point where she was immobile or was in a wheelchair, or, you know, she could still walk and get around up until a month before she passed. But that was a 3-year, watching somebody and experiencing it with her and her family and my family. Watching her kind of slowly deteriorate. There were a lot of lessons I learned about myself. I learned I could do things I didn't think I could do because I had to. I didn't have any choice. When I said there's always more choices, well, in this case, the other choices was her not getting her medicine or her not getting to the doctor when she needed to get. I mean, there were things that I just had to do. And I realized that if that presented itself, I was capable of doing that. And I didn't know that until then because I never came up before. I learned about other people, the people that are going to help you when you get in that situation, just do it. They come over uninvited to do something that's helpful to you. They'll come over and they'll cook you dinner, or they'll call you up and say, let me take Ginger to the hospital for you today. You take the day off. The people that say, let me know if there's anything I can do for you, just give me a call. They're never going to be around. They're never going to help you. So those are people who are just saying that to make themselves feel good. Okay. Gotcha. So there's some people that you can actually count on, and other people that you can't. I learned about that. And I learned about life. And what I learned about life is you better enjoy every day right now. Find some joy every day, because, like I said, nobody's guaranteed tomorrow.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think, like, you've shared, like in other podcasts that I've heard, where your two sons became tennis players with you.
And yes.
That was because that was, you know, an interest at that time. And so you spent time with them, and then your stepson, you know, you were into golfing at that time. So he learned golfing. And I know you talked about, you know, taking the trip, and I think that can go hand in hand with the, like, our day-to-day and week-to-week activities. Like, hey, you know, take your kid to the bagel shop, you know, buy him a bagel, sit down, spend 15 minutes. Or with my grandkids, you know, it's been taking them for donuts, and then we'll go through the car wash. And it's just something that is a memory, a specific to a person.
Yes.
My wife does different things with our grandkids and with our kids. And I mean, Angelo, they're in their mid to, you know, later 20s, and there's still things that we get to plan with them to create those memories. And the funny thing is, they still look back and, Angelo, we were broke, you know, but we went camping. I mean, dude, there wasn't an option to go to Disneyland. It was like,
right?
Yeah, that's not in our current available options, right? But we could go camping. And the funny thing is, Angelo, man, at that time, I thought I was the worst father because I couldn't provide the big Disneyland trip. Right. But the funny thing is, I can talk to my kids and they're like, no, this was the absolute amazing trip. You know, we were having fun playing in the dirt, catching frogs. And I'm like,
right.
Wow. But the memories can come day to day, and it doesn't have to be something elaborate. They go hand in hand. Still plan for what you can do, but don't overlook the simple, very easily reached memories to build up to that bigger thing, right? Like, you were taking your boys to activities you were involved in, and you've created those memories there and also given them a skill in the way.
Right. Well, you know, when my first son was born, it was 1974, and he'll be 50 in September. The song Cat's Cradle came out, Harry Chapin, where the guy's working too hard and his kid wants to play ball, or his kids keep asking him, let's do something together. And the guy's always too busy. And then when the kid grows up to be an adult and the father wants to spend time with the kid, guess what? The kid's too busy. He's not going to spend time with them. So that song hit me right between the eyes. And I said, I'm not going to be that guy. So,
I can appreciate that, man.
So my kid, and fortunately, I've always had a job which gave me some flexibility of time. You know, I was a college professor, which is fun when you're in the classroom, but there's a lot of time when you're not really doing anything because it wasn't a big school and I didn't have to do research. So I could go to my kids' little programs at school, or I could take them with me. I could take them out to breakfast, or I could take them to lunch, or I could take them to the tennis courts or whatever. And then as a consultant, you know, there's times when your schedule's not booked. So, and I can create my own schedule. I if a client asked me, can you do something on Tuesday? And I said, well, it'll have to be in the afternoon because I got something to do with my kids in the morning. They don't have to know that. They just know that I'm available Tuesday afternoon. But little things like just, you mentioned the donut shop. My grandkids, same thing. When they spend the night, I've got to go get donuts. Before they get up, I get up. I go get the donuts because they like to have them at the house when they wake up. They want to wake. If the donuts aren't there, it's bad from their point of view. So that's something that they look forward to. It's a tradition that we've developed just the way, you know, when my kids were young, I would take them with me either to the tennis court or to the golf course because I wanted to spend time with them. But selfishly, I wanted to be doing something that was fun for me too. So we ended up doing that together. And both my older sons got really good at tennis, and my stepson is a really good golfer, and we play golf. We still play golf together on a regular basis today. But you know, if they wanted to hang around with me, I'm an only child, so I'm kind of self-centered. But if they wanted to spend time with me, they were going to come do something that I was going to have fun doing anyway. And we all ended up having fun doing it together, and that they still remember those things. You know, my youngest son, every golf trip we've taken together, we've rehashed it over lunch many times. We talk about, we went to Hawaii and played golf together. We went to Arizona and played golf together. I'm just fun stuff like that. And we talk about it. Hilton Head, for example. So yeah, if you can still do what you want to do and involve your children or your grandchildren in a way that's going to be meaningful to them in ways that you don't even understand right now, you're creating memories for them. It might be fairly meaningless to you, but they're looking at it through a totally different lens. And they just want you. They want some of you. If you can give your kids undivided attention, that'll mean more to them than anything else.
100%. I can think back on playing video games, you know, like we'd go on date night. You know, I've got four children.
Right.
And I would take one child, we'd go get something to eat, come back, and then play video games for a while. Well, they all have different interests. And I'm thinking back, one of my daughters liked mythology. Mm-hmm. And so we got a video game that we could play together that was mythology. And sure. So she was still interested. And I was like, I don't know who all these gods and goddesses are, but she loved it. And so it's finding something that, you know, they want that time like you talked about, but then it's also something to intrigue them in it. And they still talk about it. And I was just like, you know, it was, you know, 3-4 hours and, you know, a meal and some kind of activity to just spend with them. And that, I think, carries a lot of weight.
It does.
For them to feel secure.
Yeah. More than adults realize. But look back at your own childhood. You'll still remember times that you spent with your mom or with your dad or with your uncles, or I don't know if you have brothers and sisters or your brothers and sisters. You have memories that last 40, 50 years. And what you want to do is create memories that your children are strong enough in your children that they want to create those memories or similar memories in their children. You're passing that tradition down. And I think that's pretty important. My grandchildren tell me stories that my son, their father, has told them about when he was a kid that they relate to me and said, did that really? Oh yeah, that happened. That was, mm-hmm. that was a real thing.
In the same vein, I remember 40 years ago, cause Dune, like the movie, the original movie, David Lynch, they just had the 40th anniversary. And I went and saw it with my wife and son because I've subjected them to that movie time and time and time again.
Yep. But
the reason it's so important to me is it's the one time, Angelo, that I remember a great memory going to the movies with my dad and my brother, and I was 13. 40 years later, that thing is still, that is like my favorite movie because of that memory, that event that occurred, because in the midst of all the craziness and the chaos, that was a good memory.
Yes.
And that thing is, it's almost like a North Star, to be honest. And, you know, getting to go see it again with my wife and son then held a different joy because it was like, I already have this happy memory with this movie. Now I'm getting to share it, you know, 40 years later with them and create a different memory built on top of that. So yeah, those memories are powerful, and you know,
and they shape,
create them.
They shape us. They shape us for years to come. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're I will say that we're not slaves to those memories.
No, not at all.
You know, in fact, one of the things I like to tell people, your past is either your teacher or your jailer. You have to make the choice. Which is it going to be?
So how do you have the choice to switch between those two? We talked about reframing earlier, right? How do you reframe something that's from your past that might have you as a jailer to be a teacher?
Well, one of the things I'll ask people if they, once they relate that situation, that event, or that set of circumstances that are keeping them from moving forward, the simple question is, what can you do about that now? Right? What can you do about that now? What could you do that's going to change what happened in the past? And there's nothing they can do about it. So then we start to think about the lessons. Did you learn anything from that? What did you learn from that? How can you use that information to not make that same mistake or a different mistake in the future? So you can, if you focus on the present, which is all we've got, and plan, learn from the past, live in the present, plan for the future. I mean, that's all you can do. Too many people either live in the past or are so concerned about the future that they, like you mentioned, your in-laws, they had these great plans for when they're going to retire and they never got to realize those plans. You got the present is really all you got. So it can be difficult to let go of the past. But when you realize that you can't change the past or you can't change the people who influenced you in the past, eventually you can learn to let go of that. You know, some people never do, but most people, if they really try, they can start to think about, well, since there's nothing I can do about it anyway, let's try to make sure that nothing, you know, that bad happens in the future, or that I take some lessons from that to make sure it makes me a better person in the future.
Yeah, so true.
And I don't mean to discount how hard that can be, but it can be done.
Yeah, it definitely can be done. And it doesn't remove like that things did occur and they, you know, were unhealthy. But the choice is, you know, am I going to stay anchored in the past and let that rule me?
Yeah.
Or am I going to, you know, learn and step forward from it and give forgiveness? It doesn't mean you forget and just kind of go, hey, open door, let's repeat the process. But you gain wisdom, just like you talked about it in your past being a teacher, and you move forward. Well,
forgiveness, you mentioned forgiveness. That's critical. Just I forgive whatever it is you did, real or imagined, to me in the past. I forgive.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about it anymore. And I'm not thinking about it anymore.
It's forgiving those that you know, were involved in it as well as ourselves. Because
yes,
often there's that shame and that guilt of what did I do,
right,
that brought this on, or, you know, any slew of things. But, well, Angelo, man, you and I could keep going for quite a while there.
Oh, yes, we could.
But I do want to know, how can guys reach out to you outside of the podcast? Where can they get in touch with you?
Okay. There's two ways, really. They can go to my website, which is angelovalenti.com. Real easy. If they'd like to book a quick discovery call where we can talk for 30 minutes to see if we might have some things we can work on together, it's reachangelo.com. You can get on my calendar. You can set up an appointment. That's how to get in touch with me. Can I hold up a copy of my book, or is that against your podcast rules?
No, that's great. Go right ahead.
All right. Check my book out. You're Making This Way Too Hard. Find Your Easy Way to Enjoy Life. It's available both on Amazon and on my website. If you'd like to buy, and if you'd like an autographed copy, I can make that happen too. Just like the one I'm sending to you. If you haven't already got it, you're going to be getting it soon.
I'm running over to the post office tomorrow, Angelo. So I will let you know, my friend.
I just mailed it like Monday, so I can't count on the post office getting it there in 4 days or 5 days.
Hey, man, we can always hope and cross our fingers. If it's not there tomorrow, I'll look next Saturday. You know, I make my trip there. So, but Angelo, so appreciate you joining me, sharing, you know, that, live in the present, but also, you know, you talked about planning in the future and creating those memories in the day to day.
Yes.
And, knowing who we are, not just our identity at work, but knowing who we are internally, where we're involved, and a much larger scope than we can normally see ourselves in, that one dimensional kind of perspective. So, Angelo, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, my friend.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.